The views expressed in this podcast are those of the contributors, not of Q1 Media. You're listening to the Gotcha Movies podcast, the official podcast of GotchaMovies.com. I'm Ryan Oliver.
And I'm Taylor Dvorsky.
How's your weekend going, man?
It's busy. I've been working all weekend, but also trying to attend a Fantastic Fest here in Austin. So it's been busy, but it's been good busy.
Good.
Like, not regrettable busy.
Good busy is the best kind of busy. It's better than being completely swamped. So, well, you saw a film, opening night film of Fantastic Fest.
Yeah, Tusk.
Tusk, yes.
Welcome to Canada.
Bro.
Hey there.
Are you there yourself, fellow facial hair aficionado?
Yeah, not as good as you. My God.
New Jersey, eh?
Yeah, years back. Now it's Los Angeles.
A man torn betwixt devils and kings.
Oh! Hockey.
Yeah, you're damn right, hockey.
Don't really follow hockey.
Okay. Hands off the counter, please.
Really?
Yeah, really. Thank
Sorry.
You.
Sorry.
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 Sorry. Sorry. When you're visiting the Great White North of Canada, you got your can of do's and you got your can of don'ts. Top shelf right there, number one. Don't go telling a Canadian you don't follow hockey.
Of course. I should have known that. Makes him sad, right?
Canadian doesn't get sad. Sadness was made by the USA.
Oh, come on. What does that mean?
Take off. It's true. Right there on our flag. It's right there when you look at it and you see past that sacred maple leaf. You know what you see?
White wall.
You see that in America, you may be red, white, and blue. But in Canada, you're red, white, but never blue, eh? Ever.
Gotcha. That's actually, you know, I've never thought of it that way before. I always think of Canadians as just nice.
Well, that right there is another can of don't. We're not nice, we're optimistic. There's a difference.
Right.
And we're tolerant. And we're hung like moose.
Oh.
That's good. So, Tusk is the new film from Kevin Smith. The concept for the film came from his Smodcast that he does with Scott Mosier, based on a like Craigslist article that they found about a guy who was willing to, he was looking for a roommate and was willing to pay rent for a roommate if that person would dress up like a walrus and do stuff around the house for him whenever he asked. So he took to Twitter and basically said, you know, do you want to see this as a movie? And there was a hashtag walrus yes and hashtag walrus no. And well, obviously got enough of a walrus yes that it got made. So this movie, right out of the gate, is pretty fucking weird.
Super weird. just incredibly, incredibly weird.
What are your kind of like initial thoughts on it? I mean, I guess other than that.
I've seen it twice now. And I'm still, after I saw it the first time, I didn't really have an opinion. I was like, I mean, that's interesting, and I'm going to have to sit on it. And I basically decided that I did like it. I'm very much certain I liked it. I don't think, I mean, as a film, you know, I don't think it is exactly great. It's a one-note joke and a one-note concept, but, like, it's fascinating, and I'm super glad it exists.
Yes, I would agree 100%. Just like you, I've seen it twice as well. The first time that I saw it was Wednesday night at a press screening in Portland, and as we just discussed before we started recording, it was kind of sad. There was only 6 people total in attendance, and most people other than myself did not care for the movie, and so watching this movie among people who are just not with it is kind of a, like, draining experience. And so I wrote my review for it kind of like, I gave it like almost like a half-assed pass, and then I'm like, you know, if you're interested in this movie, definitely don't miss it, but I'm not 100% sure how I feel about it. And then seeing it the second time, I saw it Friday afternoon after a screening of a film, which we'll maybe discuss next week, but it was terrible. And so it was like, it was just exactly like what I needed, and watching it with an audience, granted not much bigger than the one I saw on it with on the night before, two nights before before it, just hearing it work for people and like having a good time, like I enjoyed it more and I thought about it more, and like a lot of the flaws I had the first time were actually cleared up the second time. I actually quite am really on board with this film, despite some weird tonal shifts that it has.
And like I think, like, I recognize, you know, oh, it's like not exactly the, you know, it's not like, it's not a great film, but it's like, it's, I'm glad it exists. And another thing I really like is, so yeah, I got to see it opening. It was the opening film that played Fantastic Fest here in Austin. And so I saw it there. And like, that was a great crowd to see it with, because that's just, that's the kind of audience this film demands, like this, what this film needs. And another thing too, that I thought was great is Kevin Smith, like after it was over, you know, he's doing the Q&A, and he's like, just kind of opens up by saying, like, first off, like, he's like, like, look at the movie I just made. Like, don't, you know, don't let anyone ever tell you that a film idea is too stupid. Like, don't let anyone ever say that. If there's a film you want to see made and no one's making it, go and make it yourself. You know, like, there'll be an audience for something, and don't let anyone ever tell you it's too dumb of an idea.
Yeah, it's, I mean, the movie is total, like, it's a B movie. It's a midnight movie, like, at heart. It really is. And so, like, playing there at Fantastic Fest among a huge crowd, I can imagine the energy in the room was just, like, glowing. Am I safe to assume that?
Yeah, it was, yeah, it's just, it was a great energy, a great crowd to see it with, because it's just like, they kind of, I don't want to say they get it, but like, they're the kind of audience that accepts what this film is.
Right, they eat it up, basically, like, it's for them. And it's interesting that you say that he said, you know, don't let people tell you an idea is too stupid, because for me, on a personal level, I started watching Kevin Smith's films at a very impressionable age. And so I kind of, like, really fell in love with his films and his writing, and just, like, he was one of the filmmakers who inspired me to want to become a filmmaker. And I was just curious how you, like, feel on the spectrum of Kevin Smith as a whole.
I think, I mean, personally, because, like, the same as you, Kevin Smith, I did start watching his films at, like, a pretty impressionable age for me, too, because the first Kevin Smith film I saw was Clerks 2. But like I caught it kind of early to mid teens, which is also around the time that I just started really, really realizing my passion for film and that that's what I wanted in myself to kind of look for a career in. So I caught his films at this like early time in my life, like where it was super impressionable. In fact, actually, when I was like probably mid teens, I wrote this like 30-page short film script that was more or less a complete ripoff of Clerks.
Oh, really? Nice. Yeah, it's interesting that you mention. I don't want to say like your generation. I mean, you're only a couple years younger than I am, but I know a lot of people who Clerks 2 was their first introduction to Kevin Smith. That's kind of funny. Like, I know a lot of people, because that was a very mainstream, kind of mainstream movie. I mean, it was released in quite a bit of theaters. And, I mean, it was a raunchy comedy in a time when, like, R-rated raunchy comedies were kind of making a return. And so I remember a lot of people, at least in my class, like, were talking about Clerks 2. And I was like, well, have you seen the first Clerks? And most people said they hadn't. And so I thought that's very interesting that you as well, that Clerks 2 was your favorite, or first film to introduction to Kevin Smith. Mine was actually the first Clerks. Was the first, I think, uncensored Kevin Smith movie that I ever watched in whole. Or maybe it was Mallrats. I'm not totally sure. But I was really fell in love with his style of writing. I think Clerks 2, before Tusk, I think Clerks 2 was the last movie of his that I, like, really championed. Like, I know a lot of people who really don't like that movie for, you know, some reason. I understand, but, like, I'm still quite a big defender about that movie. I thought he had something to say, you know, revisiting those characters 12 years later. But after that, like, Zach and Miri Make a Porno it's funny, but it's not a true Kevin Smith movie, I feel. Like, it was him doing a mainstream kind of raunchy comedy, even though it is definitely funny.
Yeah, it's fair. And I can agree with that. I like it quite a bit. But like I said, it's also because I almost have, like, I don't even say a level of bias toward Kevin Smith. But I do personally just like his stuff a lot. And therefore, just kind of am open to watching any of it. Mm-hmm. So I will agree that that's more of his studio film, although not at the level that Cop Out was. I couldn't even finish Cop Out.
I was about to say, the less we talk about Cop Out, the better. Which
I turned it off.
It's not even a true Kevin Smith movie. I mean, he's even said himself, he's like, I'm a much better writer than I am a director. So mm-hmm. The fact that they would hire him to direct a movie he didn't write seems kind of silly to me. So Cop Out, really not good. And then Red State... How do you feel about Red State? Because I wanted to revisit it before we recorded, and I didn't get a chance to.
Interesting enough, I actually did revisit it semi-recently, as of like a couple of weeks ago, and I'm actually a big defender of Red State. I liked it a lot, and I know that a lot of people really don't think it's like that great. However, I thought it, like, in kind of the same way Cuss does, I think it owes a huge amount to Michael Parks and his performance.
Yes, 100% agree with you on that one. Michael Parks is terrific in both Red State and Tusk, which, I mean, we'll dive more into Tusk in a bit, but yes, I agree about Parks' performance. I'm one of those people, I understand you defending it. Both my co-hosts on the other podcast I do, Over Under, are both really big fans of Red State, and I'm one of those rare people, who's just kind of in the middle on the film, because I haven't met a lot of people like myself. Most people either love it, like you do, or they hate it, and I think Michael Parks is terrific in it. I think it's his best shot film. I think both Red State and Tusk is his best looking films. And I think it shows a lot of growth and promise as a director. It's kind of like that line in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, when Jay and Silent Bob go to see Holden McNeil, who's played by Ben Affleck, about getting their money for the Bumpman and Chronic movie, and Ben Affleck said he sold his rights. And Jay's like, why the fuck would you do a thing like that? And then Holden's like, why in God's name would I want to keep writing about characters whose pre-central occupation is weed and dick and fart jokes? You got to grow up. And I feel like that's what he's doing with these films. And but so, I felt like Red State, other than Michael Parks's monologue, which is like intense and scary and just really, really strong, I feel like Kevin Smith's writing wasn't up to the par that it usually is in Red State. And even though it's his best looking film, I feel like the writing was kind of fell by the wayside, which is his strengths. Whereas like
I was just commenting on that Michael Parks monologue in that film. I actually, because of that monologue scene, I actually would almost say I prefer Michael Parks' performance in Red State to Tusk. I think it's just because of that monologue alone that I think is such a great scene.
Yes. I would say his performance in Red State's better, but I think I would take Tusk as a film over Red State.
I would take Tusk as a film, I think.
So let's dive more into Tusk. We haven't really, I mean, we talked about the basis of the movie, but we didn't really talk about who's in it, what's it about. So anyway, what it's about, Justin Long plays this guy named Wallace Brighton, and he, like Kevin Smith, has a podcast. It's like a juggernaut popular podcast. His co-host is Haley Joel Osment, all grown up, which is kind of strange to see on screen. And so Justin Long basically goes to Canada to interview this internet sensation, and for whatever reason is not able to do it. And so he starts to try and find something else to do for his podcast, and he finds an ad in a bathroom at a bar about this guy who spent a life at sea and has all these tales. And so he goes to his house. This guy's name's Howard Howe, who's played by Michael Parks. And basically the premise that we talked about earlier based on the Craigslist ad is what happens, but as a body horror film. And it's a weird like mishmash of horror and comedy, but I think it really works. What about you? What do you think?
I think, it's the same. I think it worked pretty well, all in all, as a mishmash of horror and comedy. I think, like, tonally, you get the first half, which is kind of far more horror-based than the second half, and I feel like the second half is actually just kind of a comedy through and through, really. Like, it's a disturbing comedy, but it's still funny.
That's true. I'd say, like, the first third is very much like a Kevin Smith, like, film, and then it becomes horror, and then it becomes that, like, broad, like, almost like a Mel Brooks, like, screwball comedy in the last third of the movie.
It really does,
A character is introduced, played by a very famous A-list actor, He plays this French-Canadian detective named Guy Lepant. And we won't say who the person is, but he's even credited in the credits as Guy Lepant. Like, it doesn't say who the person is. But this particular actor, the first time I saw it, I thought he was really distracting. And maybe because everyone in the audience wasn't getting it, so I just felt uncomfortable. And then, but seeing it the second time, he's pretty funny, I have to admit.
Oh, I think he was fantastic. I laughed so much in the second half because of his character. And I thought he was great.
Yeah, I thought he was great too. And I think Genesis Rodriguez is really good in it. And I mean, she's not in a lot of stuff. She's kind of an up and comer, but she plays Justin Long's girlfriend, kind of vengeful at times. She has actually a pretty good monologue that hits pretty hard. And I think what I liked about this movie is that I didn't know where it was going. Like, most of the time, like, I loved to be surprised with this film. And the concept is so outlandish and so bizarre that every step of the way, I was like, okay, how far is he going to push it? And then he pushes it to that point and then pushes it even further. And I loved the balls of that. Like, I love this.
Yeah, that's why it's so much of, like, why I just appreciate it for being a thing. Like, that it happened. It's just, like, it's just ballsy that it just committed to the idea and just kept taking it further and further.
Oh, absolutely. The best reaction is, again, I've talked about, like, my co-host talking about Red State. I saw it with one of my co-hosts, Eric McClanahan, on Over Under. And, the reveal, the first scene where there's the big reveal, he just, like, puts his hands up and goes, he fucking did it. Like, he actually pulled it off. And that was, like, the funniest reaction that I had heard. Like, it was, like, he did it. And it's just so insane.
Yeah, and it's, like, I noticed because it was, like, when I saw it at Fantastic Fest, when that big reveal happens, it was like this, like, the audience, like, half of them just thought it was hilarious, and the other half just actually seemed, like, disturbed by it, and there was, a third, which I kind of fell into, of, like, it was disturbing, but it was, like, just funny that he just took it that far. Yes. Like, you weren't really sure the exact reaction that you needed to warrant.
And it's, I honestly think it's both. Like, I was yeah, laughing, but I was cringing at the same time. I was like, oh, man, that's so fucked up, but yet it's hilarious at the same time. And Justin Long, I mean, without, like, getting into full sport, like, he gives a very, like, physical performance, and really, really good at it, I would have to say.
Yeah, because, like, yeah, he does it, just, like, you have that first half of him kind of being more typical Justin Long, you know, because he gets to talk.
Yeah, yeah, he's very much like a motor mouth, kind of, like, I wouldn't say, like, I mean, definitely a more, like, heightened version of Kevin Smith, because Kevin Smith's not douchey, this guy's, like, totally douchey and such a jerk, that at first you're like, well, you know, he kind of deserves these things happening to him, but then you realize, well, okay, nobody deserves to have that happen to them, no matter who they are. But, yeah, I think he's really strong in it. The first time that I saw it, I didn't stay till the end of the credits.
And, oh, you didn't?
No, and no, I did the second time. There's the post-credit stinger, of course, so definitely, listeners, if you haven't seen the movie, which you should, stay till the end of the credits. But you know how in the end of it, Smith and Scott Mosier are talking about, like, they show that snippet from the podcast,
yeah,
where they came up with the idea. And, like, that made me more okay with the ending of the movie without spoiling it for people who may not have seen it. But, like, I thought the ending was really, like, I didn't think it fit. I thought it was cheesy, and I thought that they were trying to go for, like, the kind of the way that The Fly is, because The Fly, Cronenberg's The Fly, has the love triangle and, like, the horrible, like, disfigurement thing that goes on. And I felt like that arc wasn't really earned, but then when I listened to the, like, they talk about the podcast, and it was, like, it was a joke, basically. And I was like, yeah, okay, I'm more on board with this ending now.
It's just like, no, this is just exactly what they intended.
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, it's kind of like a big inside joke. The movie is kind of an inside joke. So if you're not, like, a Kevin Smith fan, I probably wouldn't recommend this movie to, like,
not. Yeah, I feel like if you don't have any kind of attachment to Kevin Smith at all, like, this, you are not gonna, this is not gonna be a movie that'll grab you.
No, absolutely not. It's, people will be like, what the hell did I just watch? I mean, because, even, like, even Smith fans are gonna say that, but.
Yeah, because, like, I feel like, inherently, like, I mean, the concept is a stupid one.
It is.
And, you know, even Smith himself would admit that, but it's like, it just reaches that point around the halfway point when you get that big reveal of like, oh, there, this is where this movie is now. It's like, you roll with it.
Yeah.
And you didn't get engaged by it, or you just completely check out if you haven't already.
Exactly. But it, like, the now that watching it the second time, I feel like a lot of the transitions are pretty seamless from horror to comedy. Like, it works. It really, really works. And, yeah, I think this movie is a lot of fun. And I would probably even see it a third time if the opportunity arose, because I really enjoyed it. And seeing it that second time really, really helped after that, like, poor, pitiful press screening.
Yeah, just like, yeah, that's true. And it was, whereas when I saw it the second time, it was the reverse experience where there were four total people in the theater, myself and then Jonathan, who writes for Gosh and is also my roommate, and then there were two because the other two people left.
Yeah, so you guys had a private screening for about half the movie.
Basically.
So what's awesome about this, like, it was nice to hear, I just listened to the episode today that Kevin Smith and Scott Mosier released, their Smodcast, and he was talking about, because Kevin Smith, he gets a little overly sensitive with critics and, like, with his movies maybe not performing well in the box office. But this movie, he seemed, like, really pleased. He's like, yeah, it didn't make a lot of money. He's like, but it didn't cost a lot of money, and it's a weird movie, and it's not going to be for everybody. And it's, you know, he's like, he loves that there's people on both sides, people who love it and people who hate it. And from what I can glean from the conversation, too, and what I like is Kevin Smith's kind of back in the film culture conversation that I felt like he'd left for quite some time. Because, I mean, he had been doing his podcast and, like, the spoiler show on Hulu, but I felt like that was more for, like, diehard fans of just him, not necessarily, like, cinephiles in general. So hearing people going to see this movie, even if they're like, fuck this movie, it's stupid, I'm glad that that's happening. And I'm glad he's doing two more films, two more Canada-set films. That's, it's like going to be a horror trilogy. That's awesome.
I don't even know. It's like, is Yoga Hoser supposed to be a horror film?
Well, maybe not horror. I can't back that up. So I retract that previous statement. But it is set in Canada, though.
Yeah, so I know he discussed it a little bit at Fantastic Fest, just that it's following the two girls from the gas station, which are actually Kevin Smith and Johnny Depp's daughters.
Yeah.
And then also more Guy Lepant.
Yes, yes. And every actor from this movie is going to be in it, playing different characters, of course. But Justin Long, Haley Joel Osment, Genesis Rodriguez, Michael Parks, and I think Ralph Garman as well. Like, they're all going to be in Yoga Hosers. And they're going to be in Moose Jaws as well, his third one, which is going to be a horror film. That one, yeah. We...
He basically said at Fantastic Fest that it's going to be Jaws with a moose.
Yeah, he just said that on his podcast today, too. He's like, it's his version of Jaws, but a moose. I mean, you know, after Tusk, like, seriously, that concept may sound stupid. I'm going to fucking watch it. Like, there's no doubt.
Like, I'm definitely going to see it because I'm going to see anything he makes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, definitely. Yoga Hosers, I don't know. I'm not as, like, excited about that as Moose Jaws, but I'm still going to see it. I don't know. Maybe it's because the same girls from the convenience store, they weren't my favorite part of the movie, but they had their moments.
Mm-hmm. I'm also excited because I know... And I'm assuming he'll do work on Moose Jaws as well. But also, we can talk about this. It's going to get more spoilery, I guess, for fair warning of audiences. But yeah, I actually kind of wanted to talk a little bit about Robert Kurtzman's, like, prosthetic effects.
Yes. So, yeah, skip ahead a little bit, listeners. Probably, like, 2 or 3 minutes if you don't want any, like, further spoilers of Tusk. But, yes, those effects, like, I don't know. It looked really awesome, I think. And, yeah,
it kept the B-movie look of, like, you can tell, like, oh, this isn't, like, terribly huge budgeted, but it completely worked.
No, it's like a rubber suit, basically, for the walrus. But it's, like, it's still, like, the way it's stitched together and, like, bloody and, like, it was really strong. The other thing I really liked about the movie, I have to point out, because there's a lot of people saying this was his version of, like, the Human Centipede, which I've never seen. Have you ever seen it?
I've actually seen both of them.
Oh, God.
I despise both of them.
Yeah, I imagine. So I can't bring myself to watch them. So I guess you're either a greater man than I or more of a masochist than I am. I'm not sure which one. But I've not seen them, but I can only imagine how, like, disgusting they are. But this movie, there isn't really any, like, moments like that. Especially the scene when Michael Parks is constructing the creature. Like, you just see blood on utensils, just close-ups of that, and, like, flaps of skin hanging. Which, to me, like, that leaving to the imagination is much more terrifying than actually showing
it. Yeah, because during the whole creation, it's actually just, like, a Michael Parks monologue.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, like... And Kevin Smith can, like, get away with shit like that. Because even though it's, like, very expositional and on the nose, like, this person is insane, first of all. And secondly, Smith is able to write dialogue. And, like, we know that that's his style. And it works. It just works for him the way that it may not work for other people. And and Michael Parks just sells it, man. He just really sells it. He's, like, got split personalities in this film, too. And he nails both of them. And, I just think this movie strikes its tones, like, really, really well.
And Justin Long's actual performances within the walrus suit, too, just, like, it is very physical since he can no longer talk, like...
Yeah, exactly. It's physical, and he has, like, resorts to grunting and, like, moving just, like, up and down, like, lateral movements. And it's just, like, it's so good and so terrifying and hilarious and, I kind of retract my review that I wrote for Gotcha Movies after the first viewing. I gave it a 3 out of 4, but I'd probably bump it up, or 3 out of 5, excuse me. I'd probably bump it up to a 4 out of 5. Like, I really enjoyed this movie upon second viewing.
Yeah, it's just, I think it might take 2 viewings just to get, I mean, granted, if you hate it after the first viewing, I don't think a second viewing will switch your mind anyway.
But... No, not at all.
But, like, I just thought, but it was, anyways, also another thing I was bringing up about Robert Kurtzman effects, it's just, like, at Fantastic Fest, Kevin Smith also mentioned something about that he's designing something for Yoda hosers that he said tops the walrus and tusk.
Really? Okay. Yeah. That has me fascinated anyway. And Moose Jaws, of course, he's doing that as well.
Yeah, so I'm definitely excited to see what effects he comes up with for both of these films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The walrus was super. I thought it was impressive.
I'm really happy that he's making these movies. He's making movies that he wants to make, and he even said that as well on his podcast, and that I'm glad that he's kind of retired the View Askew universe that he was first known for. I know, I think he might be trying to make Clerks 3 still, but I kind of hope it doesn't happen. I think Clerks 2 ends, like, so perfectly that you don't need a third one.
Yeah, like, that's... I'll see Clerks 3 if it happens, but I agree. I think Clerks 2 is a perfect ending.
Oh, yeah, because especially, like, that fade to black and white, you know, back at the quick stop. His mom even still going through the milk to find the one that isn't going to expire. It's just perfect. I think it's a really strong ending. So. Yeah,
so I don't think Clerks 3 needs to happen, but if he wants to make it, that's cool. But
yeah,
it doesn't currently seem like that's going to be the case.
No, it doesn't seem like it. I'm interested to see, like, how this trilogy plays out and to see what he does next. And, you know, he's a filmmaker that, like, I wouldn't say fell off my radar, because I'm always going to have a soft spot in my heart for Kevin Smith. But for a while, he was somebody who I was just, like, I wasn't really excited when a project he was doing was announced. And now it's, like, re-energized my excitement for what Kevin Smith does next. So, bravo, Kevin Smith. I know he's probably a big listener of this podcast. I'm sure he is. Totally. He listens to the Gotcha Movies podcast. So, yeah, good work, Kevin Smith. We loved your film. So another film that was out in wide release, not the number one film this weekend, but a film you and I both saw, which is This Is Where I Leave You.
They're Shiva chairs. You sit low to the ground as a sign of mourning. That's why they're like that.
Okay. Don't some people sit Shiva for just like 3 days?
Yes, I've seen that. That's a thing.
Wow. Nope, it's not a thing. Maybe that could be our thing.
It can't be your thing. There is no... Okay, this is
why. We can pioneer that.
We're not going to pioneer it. Nobody here is going to pioneer it because the word Shiva is Hebrew for 7. 7 days, no work, no travel. Your ass is in those seats. That's it. Those are the rules.
Well, I'd love to find the word for 3 because I don't think
Stop it. This was your father's dying wish and you're negotiating? I mean, he was not a perfect man or a perfect father, but he sure as hell was better than most.
Mom.
No. Your father had one final request and we are going to honor it. It's going to be hard. It's going to be uncomfortable and we're going to get on each other's nerves. But for the next 7 days, you are all my children again. And you are all grounded.
And I have to, like, right out of the gate, I have to kind of eat crow a little bit. Because as you know, Taylor, and as our audience probably knows who's listened to it, like, the 2 episodes ago, I pretty much like laid out my disdain for this movie, that I had absolutely zero interest in seeing it, and that I hate most of director Sean Levy's work. I kind of enjoyed this movie, like, not in the way I would probably fully recommend it, but I came out of it going like, wow, that wasn't terrible.
Yeah, and I actually, I read the book, so I had to, around the halfway point, I finally was able to kind of remove myself from the fact that, like, comparing it to the book and accepting it on its own terms, just like, is it as good as the book? Absolutely not. There's just, like, far less character development, and it's just like you're losing a lot of that when you make the film transition. But once you remove it from that, and once I just started watching it as a film, I enjoyed it. I don't think it's you know, a great film, but I thought it was an enjoyable one. I thought the cast is great and did well, and I thought the script was pretty decent because Jonathan Tropper, the author of the novel, also wrote it.
Yeah, I went into this movie with, like, dirt-low expectations. I was not expecting to like it. The cast is great. I mean, like you said, Jason Bateman, Tina Fey, Adam Driver, Corey Stahl, Rose Byrne, Jane Fonda. Like, there's just a ton of cast members in this movie. The premise of the movie, basically, is a family's patriarch passes away, and his dying wish was them to sit Shiva for seven, well, which is the Jewish word for seven, 7 days and mourn. So the whole family is back under the roof, and so it's a dysfunctional family dramedy. And I think, I would say prior to this movie, which I think this is far and away the best movie that Sean Levy has ever done, which is not saying much, but like, it's an entertaining enough movie that it's pleasant, and it's not like overly, like, it's sentimental, but it's not like sappily sentimental the way that like in The Internship is. But I'd say his previous best movie, if you could call it that, before This Is Where I Leave You, was Date Night with Tina Fey and Steve Carell. Not a good movie by any means. A total, like, action comedy ripoff of After Hours, the Martin Scorsese film. But, like, I felt like with that movie that he literally just was like, well, I have Tina Fey and Steve Carell, and they're, you know, great comedic actors, and so I'm just going to hit record and just say go. I felt like that movie maybe had, like, a 30-page script that was all just screen direction, and they improv the entire movie. And I felt like he did that with This Is Where I Leave You, and then he's like, okay, I just have this great cast, so I'm just going to let them do their thing and let it play out. And I felt like that worked for the most part. Because there's two, like, really lowbrow running gags that I despised. Well, one, not as much, but, like, I think we can go ahead and say them. Like, because most of the stuff that I thought was funny, and maybe you are the same way, maybe you aren't, I felt like I didn't feel that that was Sean Levy making it funny. I just felt like the cast was able to sell it enough. And in Jonathan Tropper's writing, like, I thought it was the writing and the acting. I mean, granted, he had to, like, tell the actors to go, but, like, they did fine. But, like, there was two running jokes that I felt like were totally his. Number one, Jane Fonda and her boob job. I hated every single joke that came from that. It was not funny any time that it happened.
I thought Jason Bateman sold it, though. I thought that was funny. I would grant him anything he said about it was kind of in the trailer.
But... yes. But, like, Jason Bateman's really good at that, like, underplaying and making those snarky comments. And he's also, like, no stranger to dysfunctional family because he is the, like, heart and soul of Arrested Development. So, like, he's able to sell that. But then the other joke is Tina Fey's son, likes to go potty, basically, in his little, like, travel toilet. So there's a lot of poop jokes based on that, which... for the most part, missed for me. I didn't think it was funny, but also Jason Bateman had a really, like, there was a line that was kind of a payoff to it. Not enough of one, but it made it.
I actually enjoyed that second joke. Like, not so much as a joke, I just thought it was kind of weirdly sweet.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I felt like this was a sweet, like, inoffensive movie. And it's R-rated. I don't, like... I have my beef with, like, the way the MPAA rates films, so, like, I don't think this is, like, that hard R-rated of a movie, but...
it's like, it has, you know, too many fucks, so.
Yeah, basically, like, a couple F-words, and they smoke pot in a scene. That's basically the only reason this movie is... is there nudity? There's a little bit of nudity, but who cares? It's not, you know...
Was there?
Maybe. I don't remember.
I don't think there was.
Oh, I don't recall.
I think it was mainly just that there was, like, some swearing and, I mean, there was drug use, but, like, drug use in a scene.
Yes, that's true. But, I mean, I think Jason Bateman's, like, was really strong in this movie. Like, you know, maybe a minor spoiler. Seeing him, like, cry and, like, reaching a legitimate, like, feeling in the movie was surprisingly heartwarming.
I still enjoyed it as a movie. Like, I'd, you know, recommend it enough. Definitely a rental, if not a matinee.
Yeah, I'd recommend this movie to, like, a general audience, you know, like, for, like, film lovers. I mean, obviously, Tusk would be the movie. I'd, like, go see it. It needs your help. But, like, for people who would just, you know, cringe and say that movie's too friggin' weird, like, this is a pleasant movie. This is where I leave you as.
Yeah, like, it's enjoyable, and I don't think anyone's gonna walk out of that, like oh, I hated everything about that, because I think it's not really that kind of movie. Like, it's not an absolutely despicable film.
No, I did actually hear a response on Twitter of somebody who really, really hated it, but, I could probably say who it is. Ray Subers of Box Office Mojo was like, he's like, it's an embarrassment for all involved. Sean Levy is the worst. And I was like, it's, you know, it's not a great movie. But it's like, it defied all my expectations in a way that I was like, that wasn't bad. And the cast is solid enough in it. Adam Driver, I think, is really terrific in it.
I think Adam Driver is great, though, in just about everything. I think he always is a good scene stealer.
Yeah, I think he is, too. He's definitely a scene stealer in this movie. I mean, there are some, like, plot threads that are, like, super convenient in this movie. And, like, it wraps up really nice the way you expect it to. But, I mean, it's a movie that, like, I don't know. I guess there's some people who didn't hate it, but, like, didn't like it. And they're like, oh, what a waste of a cast. And I was like, yeah, but look at the filmmaker behind it. And, like, tell me that that wasn't a surprise, that it was decent. Maybe that's my bias, I guess.
A little bit. I mean, I don't really have, like, any kind of opinion either way towards Sean Levy. Like, okay, hold on. I'm pulling up his IMDb page real quick so I can give you my assessment of his filmography.
Okay. That's fair.
Let's see. What have I seen that Sean Levy has done? I've seen This Is Where I Leave You, obviously. Mm-hmm. I didn't see The Internship.
Good. It's terrible.
I didn't see Real Steel. I saw Date
Night. Real Steel, you mean the robot remake of Over the Top, the Stallone arm wrestling movie?
Well, see, I didn't see it, so I've seen neither of those movies.
Oh, you did? Okay. Yeah, Real Steel is basically a remake of Over the Top, but with robots. That's basically what it is.
I saw the first Night at the Museum.
Yeah.
Ugh. And I enjoyed it enough. Granted, I was like 12 when it released.
Yeah, so, I was 16. Like, I went to go see it by myself at our, like, local theater, but I was like, man, this movie is dumb. But
I didn't see the sequel, though.
I didn't either. I didn't bother with the sequel.
I do despise the Pink Panther.
Yes, the Pink Panther remake is terrible.
I despise that. I liked Cheaper by the Dozen. Nah. I was 9 when this movie released.
That's right. I have to remember you are like 3 or 4 years younger than I am. So.
Oh wait, you did Big Fat Liar? Okay, I loved Big Fat Liar when I was little.
Oh really? Oh man, my sister really loved that movie. I think you guys are around the same age.
That was when Frankie Muniz was top of the world.
Yeah, Frankie Muniz was like the shit then for like anybody who was like a teen.
His prime career.
Yeah.
I also do like Just Married.
Oh,
I think I still enjoy that movie.
I liked that movie at the time because I thought Brittany Murphy was such a babe. May she rest in peace. But yeah, I at the time I think I did enjoy that movie, but I don't think I could go back and watch it now. There's no way.
Fair enough. But yeah, so like, there's no like film in his filmography that I absolutely love, but like I don't despise him at your level.
I think the like the one that really set it over the top for me was The Internship last year, because I love Wedding Crashers, and like I hold hope that Vince Vaughn will like one day be funny again. But like putting Vince Vaughn in anything under an R rating, other than Dodgeball maybe, is not a good thing, because him doing his like motor mouth shtick and like but trying to be like contained is really painful to watch. Did you ever see Fred Claus?
No.
It was, no, I didn't. Don't ever see that. But, like, that was a PG movie. And watching him saying, like, heck and dang instead of, like, swearing was, like, really, really painful to watch. But The Internship was kind of that way. But it was, like, really sappy and sentimental and not funny. And, like, a pretty much a two-hour Google commercial, basically, is what it was. And, yeah, I really despise that movie. And I think that one finally put me to the top and realized, wow, this director is... kind of a hack, but this is where I leave you a surprisingly enjoyable movie. Long story short. Yeah, I would say so. The only other movie that I saw this week, well, actually, I did see The Maze Runner, but I'm not going to talk about that. Jenny talked about it on our last episode, and if you think you are somebody who would potentially like The Maze Runner, you can check out a previous episode, because Jenny enjoys those young adult movies more than I do. I did not really care for it. But I did see A Walk Among the Tombstones, the new film with Liam Neeson. It's directed by Scott Frank, who did The Lookout, which is a movie that I absolutely love. And
it's with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, right?
Yes, and Jeff Daniels. Yeah,
that's I do like that movie.
It's a really strong movie. This one's, it's got, like, really strong direction and cinematography. It's, I can't think of his name or really pronounce it very well, but he was Paul Thomas Anderson's cinematographer on The Master. And which is, I mean, a gorgeous film. And this movie looks really, really gorgeous. It has a good, like, film noir vibe. And but it starts really strong. Liam Neeson is solid in it. He's like a retired cop who's now an unlicensed private detective. And he's hired by this drug lord who's actually the Dan Stevens from The Guest. And he hires him to
find... Which is a movie he's great in.
Yes, that's what I've heard. It hasn't yet to make its way to the Pacific Northwest, but I am counting the days until it does. He hires Liam Neeson's character. It's based on a book by Lawrence Block. There's actually like 17 of these books based on this character, and this is the 10th book. So randomly, they decided to adapt the 10th book. I don't know why. It's the same thing with Jack Reacher. It was like the 9th book in that series. But anyway. Liam Neeson's pretty solid in it. The first 40 minutes is a really intriguing detective story. Once there's a big reveal, it kind of deflates tension, and then the third act becomes Taken to the Grave, but the only thing missing is DMX. Like, that's basically... It ends in, like, a silly bloodbath of a shootout, and it just becomes... And, like, he's literally talking on the phone. There's a scene, these, like, serial killers... they're, like, serial killers. They kidnap the women of... the wives of drug dealers and, like, ultimately torture them and kill them for, like, reasons unexplained. But then this one drug dealer's wife is sick, like, really ill, and so his daughter gets kidnapped. But Liam Neeson is on the phone with these people over a kidnapped daughter. And I was like, this is fucking Taken again. Like,
I mean, everything Liam Neeson does these days.
Yeah, pretty much. It's, like, nonstop. It's Taken on a plane. Like, yeah, Walk Among the Tombstones.
This is not the first time this joke has showed up on the podcast.
No, we've definitely made fun of Taken on a Plane before. but anyway, it just devolves, and which is unfortunate because it had a really strong like first 40 minutes, and it's got some really good dialogue. Scott Frank is a really strong writer as well as director. He wrote Out of Sight and Get Shorty. So it's like I was hoping for this movie to be good. It's not bad. It's probably worth a rental, but it's not worth rushing out in theaters and going to see. So I'd say that's my overall take on it. Plus, at the same time, like, you know, you feel for the people who are getting tortured and kidnapped in this movie, but, like, who do you root for? They're all, like, drug dealers. So, like, this is... And then Liam Neeson's just Liam Neeson. Like, he doesn't show that he's wounded or has any post-traumatic stress, which his character is kind of supposed to have. So it just doesn't... It limps to the finish line instead of sprinting across.
Well, okay. I wasn't really planning to see it, and so I probably won't.
Yeah, I figured you weren't really interested in seeing it. I was more interested because of the filmmaker involved than I was with Liam Neeson, which, I mean, I like Liam Neeson. I thought The Gray was, like, a really good surprise, but this was more Taken than The Gray, unfortunately, which I was hoping it would be the other way around.
I didn't know, I'm actually looking at Scott Frank's IMDb page right now. I didn't know he, like, wrote, like, The Wolverine and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, he did write, I think he did write a script of The Wolverine.
He also wrote Marley and Me.
Really? Wow. But more importantly, he wrote Out of Sight and Get Shorty.
But also Marley and Me.
Oh, shut up. I've never seen Marley and Me, so I don't
care. Okay, Ryan.
What?
Ryan, watch Marley and Me.
Why? I know what happens in it.
But it's about the experience.
Yeah, but I don't want to live. I've lived with that in real life. Why
would I want to live with that? That's true. That's true.
Oh, fair enough. So I guess before we wrap up this episode, I mean, I guess we've been starting the episode of like, what have we been watching lately? But we just kind of dove into Tusk. Is there anything you've been watching and catching up with recently that you'd want to talk about?
Let me think. Have I watched anything recently? I watched, let's see, oh, actually, like, the other week, for one of my classes, I rewatched Goodfellas for the first time in a long time.
Nice.
It's a great movie. I finally saw The Graduate, actually, because of class as well.
Oh, nice, nice. And what did you think?
I liked it a lot. I can see why it's, you know, a classic.
There's definitely a lot of, like, quote-unquote quirky indie comedies that have stemmed from that movie.
Yeah, so, and then other than that, I've been at Fantastic Fest, or, well, tried to be at Fantastic Fest as much as time has allotted me.
Nice.
So, I've seen, like, a handful of films.
Which we're planning on doing a Fantastic Fest wrap-up next week's episode, since there's only two wide releases. I've seen one of them, and it's terrible, which we'll talk about next week, and Jenny has seen the other one, which sounds like it's really solid, so we don't have too much to talk about next week. As far as things that I've caught up with, I finally saw Sin City, A Dame to Kill For.
How was it?
It was not bad, but it definitely wasn't good either. There's three storylines in this one as opposed to the four in the first one. One of them is strong, is actually, like, legitimately good. One of them is, like, okay, and one of them's terrible. So, all in all, it's kind of a mixed bag of an experience. It just felt unnecessary because it's like, you know, you waited so long, but didn't really have anything else to say. It was almost made out of, like, obligation. So, I don't know.
I had wanted to see it, but, like, just because I had seen the first one and I enjoyed the first one. But then it just kind of, like, came and went.
Yeah, it flopped bad, and I didn't even expect it. I thought I was completely gone from theaters. And the day that I went to the press screening for This Is Where I Leave You, I was around the... It's a theater outside of a mall, and I was just around the area just waiting for the screening, and turns out there was, like, two showtimes of Sin City still at that theater. So I was like, oh, well, screw it. I have nothing else to do. So I went and saw it, and yeah, it was fine. And I saw Calvary again. Yeah, it's still great. Definitely,
yeah, that's a great movie.
It's definitely my top 10 for the year so far. And other than that, I don't think I've really caught up with anything. So yeah, I think that's it for me as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Awesome. So that concludes our 24th episode of the Gotcha Movies podcast. As always, you can check out all our news and reviews at gotchamovies.com. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Gotcha Movies. As our podcast is on iTunes, so be sure to subscribe to us there if you are a fan of the show. Leave a comment or rating if you're so inclined. It helps us know what we're doing right and what we can improve on. If you enjoy this podcast, you can check out the other podcasts that I co-host, Over Under Movies, where myself and my two co-hosts, Octay Kozak and Eric McClanahan, pick an overrated movie and an underrated movie and discuss them. So yeah, I guess we'll sign off. Thanks, Taylor, for logging on and recording tonight. It was fun to talk about Tusk with you.
Yeah, I've been wanting to talk about it.
Yeah, me too. So awesome. So yeah, come back next week for our Fantastic Fest recap and our reviews of The Box Trolls and The Equalizer.